May it please the court, Mr. Presiding Judge, members of the court. My name is Norman Thomas. I am an attorney in private practice here in Virginia, and with me is co-counsel James T. Lang from the law firm of Pender & Coward. We are representing Full Circle Concepts 2, LLC, in this appeal, and we would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
3 minutes, very well. Thank you very much, sir.
Yes, sir. This case represents a relatively complex commercial case.
I'm sorry, I meant to ask you, help me understand, Potomac Insurance Company, I see SUA, and I just want to understand the relationship, just briefly. Are they a successor insurer? Or?
SUA Insurance Company is the insurance company at issue in this case. They have gone through a corporate change. They're now Tower Insurance Group.
I see the name Potomac Insurance Company of Illinois, I think it is, on the briefs. Who are they?
They are one of the insurers that was involved at the beginning. They are not involved at this time.
Okay. So SUA is the real party in interest.
SUA is the insurance.
All right. Thank you.
As I mentioned, it is a commercial case that involves essentially three legal principles and how they interplay. With respect to an insurance policy, a workers' compensation insurance policy that was purchased by Full Circle, or FCC, if you will, in March of 2009. It was placed with SUA Insurance Company through use of the solicitation and negotiation and sale assistance of a local insurance agent in Virginia Beach, and it commenced a one-year term at that time. At issue in this appeal is whether or not there was a cancellation of the policy or whether there was an estoppel of such an effort to cancel the policy.
Well, but doesn't that presuppose that there was sufficient payment in order to bind coverage? And it seems that there's no issue about that, that the would-be insured realized that they had realized well in advance of the incident that gives rise to all of this, knew that they had underpaid what was required to bind coverage, and they never fixed it. And so doesn't that create a problem of whether this was reasonable reliance that could be used for estoppel purposes?
I submit that it does not create a problem. Every invoice that was ever sent Full Circle was paid by Full Circle. And if you look in the appendix and throughout the record, they are left from the very beginning because this local agent both miscalculated the initial down payment, and she's the agent of SUA.
Mind
and
security.
So the miscalculation is on them. And then not only that, the invoice that was paid for about $6,848 in some sense, which was the exact amount billed and was hand-delivered early to the agent, she got it to the insurance company late. So the result of that was that their own agent both miscalculates and late delivers the premium. They also were billed for a survey fee, which they paid promptly, and that is in the record. And then Ms. Hudson from Full Circle is left thereafter asking for an invoice. Give me documentation. She explained very clearly. She works from that documentation. She and Ms. Emmons in other insurance settings have worked together to make sure they get invoices. But the insurance company won't send them because it's in a cancellation process because of the agent's error.
And that was made apparent, though, to the would-be insured, to Full Circle, no later than July the 1st.
Well, July 1st is a key date, and if the court will permit me, I would like to walk through from that date forward as to how this estoppel works. Let's begin with the premise that under oath, in answers to interrogatories and in a filing with the commission, SUA Insurance Company has said that it did not cancel this policy until July 8, 2009. Now, that is less than the 10 days that Full Circle had beginning July the 1st. But it is much later than they have contended in their briefs and other filings in this case. But it's under oath in an interrogatory answer, and it's filed with the commission, and their corporate officers said, well, we're not going to change that. We didn't amend that. We don't think we're bound by that. but they are bound by that. And so beginning July the 1st, they receive the notice from the commission, and then they make immediate inquiry to Ms. Emmons, the agent for SUA. And what does she tell them? She tells them, you're canceled. Which, in fact, that's not true. They're frozen at that point because they're told they're canceled when, in fact, there's another several days, another full week left to go. And then any remedies that they may have had on the face of the policy, they're told they're canceled by the agent of the insurance company. She also tells them on that day, I'm going to help you to work through this. She never did that. She was under a duty to speak. Under estoppel law, if your failure to speak works an injustice or an unfairness, or as some of the older cases say, a beguilement based on a position you've stated that you take or will take, or an action that you do or will do, you're under a duty to speak. But if she wasn't going to help them...
But estoppel is barred if it's not a reasonable reliance on the representation.
Well, they were assured as late as May the 28th that they were covered. And that was from Ms. Emmons. In fact, Ms. Emmons said, I don't know why you haven't gotten payment coupons. I don't know why you haven't gotten a copy of the policy. I don't know either. So she was going to check into that. And, of course, she never got back to them. The next thing they get is this notice of cancellation on July 1st. They leap into action. They ask her for help. SUA was under a duty to give them the correct information. They can't say you're canceled when they're not. Because if they're not canceled, they have remedies under the face of the policy. But what better source than the insurance company itself to tell you you're canceled? So they thought they were canceled. So they worked with Ms. Emmons, who promised to help them on SUA's behalf, because the policy was not canceled. There's no question of her agency at that point.
Well, notice had been given of cancellation, and under statute, it couldn't go into effect until 10 days
later.
10
days. Right. In fact, there's been a merger in many of the arguments here. The commission has 10 days, and the insured has 10 days. They may coincide, and they may not, but everybody has 10 days under the statute. In the middle of this critical period of time, commencing July the 1st, comes a letter that says, welcome to SUA Insurance Company. We're going to be working together in the future. Here's the subcontractors we're going to be working with.
You're the claim sheets.
Oh, everything you need. And in fact, there is substantial evidence in the record that that was, in fact, received during that week, either the 9th or the 10th. There is some contrary evidence. But again, SUA is responsible for their own actions with respect to their insured. If, in fact, on July the 6th, when this was sent, while the policy was, as they have indicated under oath, still valid and still ongoing, they were under a duty to say, if you got this letter, disregard it. It's a mistake. We're sorry. If you get this letter, disregard it. It's a mistake. But what happens the next week? It's evident that Ms. Hudson, one of the part owners of Full Circle and their office manager, thought they were covered, that this letter had the intended effect of bucking her up and making her think that Ms. Emmons had kept her promise, which she had not, and which she was under a duty to tell them, by the way, I'm not going to keep this promise. You need to work it out. But as the agent of the insurance company, she's under a duty to tell them, I've changed my mind. I'm not going to help you. And she never did. So the sum total of it, and I'm spirited in the way I say it, but the sum total of it is this. In the critical period of time, in the days before this policy was actually canceled, even if it was canceled a couple of days early, they took from Full Circle the ability to cure. They robbed them of that by telling them, first of all, you're canceled when they weren't, which steers them away from any remedies under the policy, telling them they're going to help them when they don't. And as the clock is ticking, they're under a duty to at least tell them, we're not going to help you, you need to do something else.
But by the time of this critical period, as you put it, the Full Circle knew that they had, by miscalculation or whatever, underpaid the amount that was required to bind coverage.
That is correct, and yet throughout the record, Your Honor, Ms. Hudson, in depositions and otherwise, has said we were ready and willing and able to pay. We asked and asked and asked for an invoice, something specific. I think we have to remember two things here also. One is that SUA will not talk to an insured. They won't do it. They can communicate.
Is that in the record, counsel?
Pardon me?
Is that in the record that
SUA? Yes, ma'am, that they will not accept communications from their insureds. It must go through their chosen agents, their intermediaries. However, they can communicate with the insured. They just won't permit it back. The other thing is also, Your Honor, something lost in all of this. All of this happened in the first few weeks of the policy. It's not like this dragged out for a year or two. This is in a very compressed time frame. In fact, essentially the first quarter of coverage, all of these things happen. By July 1st, it is a week or so outside of the first quarter, and yet these are commercial communications going on throughout a period of time, but they're just getting on their feet with this coverage. And it's not unusual, commercially, I submit to the court, that there's some adjustment and some straightening out and some figuring out where the invoices need to go. What's important in this instance is that Ms. Hudson, on behalf of Full Circle, continued to ask for them. It's not like she was hiding or dodging or hoping they wouldn't remember. She kept asking Ms. Emmons. For example, on May the 27th, she directed Ms. Wine, her in-office manager, we don't have anything. Communicate with her. And she communicates with Ms. Emmons, who says, I don't know why you haven't gotten it. I haven't gotten it either. How about a certificate of insurance for your business license?
Maybe it's not relevant, but why didn't the insured say, yeah, I'd like a certificate of insurance? They didn't, did they? Or does the record say one way or the other?
The record indicates that on the communication that was sent to Ms. Emmons, she filled out all the information for Ms. Wine and then sent it back to her. So she had everything she needed in terms of what to plug in for the City of Virginia Beach license. They were left with Ms. Emmons' yet another empty promise, I'll get back to you. And she didn't.
Okay. You're in your rebuttal time. It's up to you. But I just want to.
I would like to reserve. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Mr. Casey.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honor. Brian Casey for the Appellee SUA Insurance. This court views the evidence in the light most favorable to the prevailing party before the commission, and the commission's decisions as to questions of fact are conclusive so long as they're supported by credible evidence, and the inferences drawn by the commission, so long as they are reasonable inferences drawn from credible evidence, are likewise binding on this court.
Mr. Casey,
so I'm sorry,
I just want to make sure that, are you in agreement that the real party in interest on the appellee side is SUA, and any light to shine on who Potomac Insurance is?
Judge, Potomac Insurance was someone involved in the case earlier on. I'm not exactly sure why they're named in the style of the case.
They're an appellant, an appellee appendage, then, of some.
I suppose that's the case.
Okay,
I just took over this argument because Ms. Kearney had a death in the family, so I'm not entirely familiar as familiar with what went on in the past as she might be.
Fair enough.
As counsel, learned counsel next to me.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
But SUA is the insurer that I represent before this court this morning as the appellee. So with that reminder of the standard of review, the facts that were relied upon by the commission that are supported by the credible evidence in the record are these, and I'll highlight them. And Joanne Emmons, who is an insurance agent with Nationwide Insurance Company, replaced workers' compensation insurance coverage for Full Circle Concepts with SUA through Appalachian Underwriters Incorporated, which is a broker. So she dealt with Appalachian Underwriters Incorporated for this policy, for this coverage. Unfortunately, the down payment premium that was made by Full Circle Concepts was short. That payment was made March 24, 2009. It was insufficient to bind the policy, to bind the coverage. Appalachian Underwriters, upon receipt of that insufficient payment, promptly notified Joanne Emmons, this agent who worked for Nationwide, who had placed the coverage, about the insufficient down payment.
Well, Nationwide's agent is, as a practical matter, the agent who speaks with binding authority for SUA in these transactions.
So what happens? That's right. And so okay. What happens is Appalachian Underwriters Inc., the voice of SUA, the broker involved in this case, notifies the agent, Joanne Emmons, that the down payment is insufficient to buy coverage. And then Emmons promptly, of course, notifies the insured Full Circle Concepts, Ms. Hudson, who's an owner and administrator of Full Circle Concepts, that the down payment is insufficient. Not only does she notify her by telephone of this problem, she also faxes her a note to that effect. In fact, she was asked by Ms. Hudson to fax a note to have it in writing, and she did that. So, and then Ms. Hudson told Ms. Emmons over the phone that she would take care of paying the shortfall. And so at that point, it had been communicated clearly to the insured that the payment was insufficient. The insured had received it both by phone call and in writing and had acknowledged it and said she would take care of it and she would pay it. But she didn't. No payment was made. And when no payment was made, after some time passed, Appalachian Underwriters, Inc., AUI, mailed a notice of cancellation pursuant to Virginia Code Section 65.2-804 to Full Circle, a notice of cancellation for non-payment of premium. That notice of cancellation was mailed to the correct address. A copy of that notice was faxed to Ms. Emmons, the agent. It was issued on April 27, 2009. It notified that the policy would cancel as of May 18, 2009 if no further payments were made. And no further payments were made.
As I recall in the on the issues here, the statute appears to require actual notice of cancellation, and the commission, as I recall, had held that actual notice was not required, but that's part of the issue here. And you've just described the cancellation notice that was sent out by the underwriter. Was that sufficient to meet whatever the notice requirement is on the statute? And if so, why?
Yes. The cancellation notice was properly addressed to the insured. There was proof that it was mailed to the insured. It was accepted by the post office for mailing, and proof of mailing was obtained from the post office. The notice was not returned in the mail as undelivered. And on these facts, commission found that the insurer had proved that the notice had been provided in accordance with the statute. In addition to that, a copy of the notice was faxed by AUI, Appalachian Underwriters, to the agent, Ms. Emmons. She then notified Full Circle again and sent a copy of the notice to Full Circle. So actually, Full Circle was sent two copies of the notice, one by the insurer or the insurer's broker, AUI, and one by the agent, Ms. Emmons. Is twice as many notices as are required under the statute.
Did the insured acknowledge receipt? I remember there was some issue that they were not receiving their mail from time to time. Did the insured acknowledge receipt of either of these two notices, one that was sent by the agent or the one sent by the underwriter?
When you say the insured, I think you're speaking about Ms. Hudson for
Full Circle. Yes.
And I don't believe that Ms. Hudson in the record ever acknowledged actually receiving the notice of cancellation. But her testimony on that was not accepted as credible by the commission, based on the extensive testimony about the process of the mailing of the notices, and also the fact that there had been some history in the past, I believe, of Full Circle not complying with insurance payments and notices and things like that. So SUA is also required not only to send notice of cancellation for non-payment of premium to the insured under the statute, but it's also required to notify the commission. So on June 11, 2009, SUA filed a notice of cancellation with the commission, as required by the statute. The commission then, once it receives notice from the insurer of cancellation for non-payment of premium, then takes upon itself the obligation to notify also the insured. So there's a notice from the insurer, actually a notice from the agent as well in this case, although not required by statute, and then a notice from the commission itself to the insured that the policy is canceled or being canceled for non-payment of premium. That notice was sent to the employer on June 17, 2009 from the commission. There was no response. And that notice also asks the insured for information, because the commission is obviously concerned about an uncovered employer. No response to that notice. The commission sent a second notice because they got no response to the first one. The second notice was issued June 27, 2009. And actually, I believe in the record, Ms. Hudson acknowledges receiving the second notice from the commission, but still no response, made no response to that second notice to the commission, which asked for information from the insured Full Circle. The commission actually makes the determination of the date the policy is canceled for non-payment of premium. The statute requires that there be at least 10 days notice for cancellation for non-payment of premium. The commission actually sets that date, and the commission determined that the policy was canceled for non-payment of premium effective June 20th, 2009. I believe that's at Joint Appendix 114. So that's the date of effective date of cancellation, June 20, 2009. The accident that occurred, the workers' compensation claim accident that occurred, was August 6, 2009. Clearly outside and after the effective date of the cancellation of the policy for non-payment of premium. In this case, the employer, Full Circle, was required to take action after the cancellation notices had been issued both by the insurer and the commission. It did not do so. It did not pay, and it did not respond to the commission's notice. And Joanne Emmons, the agent, and no one else represented to the insured that SUA would provide coverage after the policy had been canceled for non-payment without any charge. So the estoppel argument fails, because there's no misrepresentation or concealment that the policy was covered, canceled for non-payment of premium. There's no misrepresentation that the insurer would provide coverage, or that there was coverage in effect after the policy was canceled.
What do we do then with the statement from the agent saying, "I'll get with the carrier and we'll get this back on its right course. I'll take care of it for you."
Well, the agent can certainly work with the insured to get new coverage, but that the agent can't create a policy that doesn't exist. The agent can't create a policy or bind coverage where the policy has already been canceled for non-payment of premium. So there is no coverage. There is no policy in existence. So the agent's statement that I will get with the insurer to work on this can't create an insurance policy that doesn't otherwise exist.
Was it after the June 20, 2009 date of cancellation that the commission established, when the agent provided the assurances saying, if you want, I'll get a certificate of coverage for you?
I don't know the date. Right. I don't know the date, Charlie. I don't know that. But my point, the point I go back to is, the agent can't create coverage that doesn't exist. The agent may be an agent under the law for the insurer, but the agent doesn't the agent doesn't have the authority to create coverage that doesn't exist. The policy is clearly canceled pursuant to non-payment. Once it's canceled pursuant to non-payment of premium effective June 20th, 2009, the agent's statements that the agent will assist in resolving the problem or helping the insured get new coverage or whatever are fine statements, but they don't create a policy. They don't bring into effect new coverage.
So the agent, you're saying the agent is no longer has binding authority because there's the policy's already been canceled.
The policy's already been canceled pursuant to the statute. And the commission found that the insurer complied with the statutory provisions for canceling the policy, and that finding was supported by credible evidence. So the policy's canceled pursuant to the statute, and that's really kind of, that's where we are. The policy's canceled pursuant to the statute. So what we have here, Judge, is that Full Circle simply did not pay, which the evidence shows was a pattern with Full Circle and its insurance policies. The commission did not find the excuses by Ms. Hudson to be credible for not payment. And that's the evidence, the credible evidence that the commission relied on, and it warrants the affirmance of the decision. What Full Circle is asking this court to do, it seems, is to find insurance coverage where the insured failed to pay the premium required to bind coverage, where the insured was notified by the agent to pay it but didn't do so, where the insured was sent a cancellation notice by the insurer for non-payment of premium, where the insured was sent a copy of the cancellation notice by the agent, where the insured is sent a notice by the Workers' Compensation Commission, and then is sent a second notice by the Workers' Compensation Commission, fails to respond to either of those notices, still does not pay during this entire time, and wants this court to find that it should be entitled to coverage under a policy that was clearly canceled for non-payment of premiums. It asks the court to affirm the decision of the full commission.
Thank you, Mr. Casey. Mr. Thomas, rebuttal.
Potomac was the predecessor company of SUA.
Thank you.
It always helps to bring trial counsel.
That's great. Thank you, Mr. Lane.
It is a new day in Virginia when a litigant such as SUA can march through judicial tribunals, having committed itself under oath that it canceled a policy on July 8, 2009, and then say something different. It was a filing with the commission. It was a filing with an answer to interrogatories with FCC. The pages of the appendix are as follows: 198, 199, 204, and 608. Not only that, they don't mention it here. It's in the record. It's clear. They want to talk about June the 20th. The commission never found, not the deputy commissioner, not the full commission, that June 20th was a date that anything happened. It was the end of the 10 days from the time they, that is the commission, received the notice of cancellation. They received it on June the 11th. Interestingly enough, it was placed in the mail stream by SUA in April. It took 6 weeks for them to get it. No wonder the commission didn't make findings of specific dates when things happen. Because, first of all, not only did they make findings about specific dates where things happened, but they made no credibility findings either. And much of what happened in April between Ms. Emmons and Ms. Hudson was hotly contested in the evidence. By virtue of the fact that July the 8th is the cancellation date, the estoppel from July 1st through that period of time is at work. And my time is almost up. There's so much more I'd like to say. However, I will answer any questions, including the page numbers for the one-way communication, if you would like me to do so. All right.
Hearing no further questions and seeing that your time
Thank
is
you
up, we'll come down and greet counsel, and thereafter we'll take up the case of Jackson versus Ceres Marine.